I am getting my first colonoscopy tomorrow. So, if those of you who've been through that, probably know more about what I'm about to go through than I do. So, if I just suddenly, you'll know why. Talk among yourselves.
This too shall pass.
Oh, yes. Well, we got something pretty interesting to cover tonight. See how well this goes. Let's start off with some of the beautiful words from the section we just recently read, the Forgotten Song. And it's a nice little meditation. I put it to some music. And it has some nice visualization. Jesus is offering us some visuals to help sort of key words now that we're working through for the rest of the night to help you let go. To help you let go of linear thinking, of knowing you know, in your journey here, you know you're on a spiritual path. And I think you probably also well know that the material path is a wonderful path, but you know, it's linear. It's like, you know, mathematics or like the alphabet. First A and then B and then C, and then everything's okay. As you start to live or abide or be guided by your spiritual self, you're going to have to be willing to let go. You're going to have to be willing to let go of the linear. You're going to have to be let go of everything making perfect sense. You understanding everything lockstep. You're going to move into feelings rather than thoughts. Thoughts are things, you know, here especially, and we have used thoughts to manufacture a very linear world. But it's also because we have spent so much energy making bodies, time, space, planet, mother, child, child belongs to mother, you know, on and on and on. This whole world, because we spent so much energy doing that and having a great time doing it, but we have spent a lot of our mind energy doing that intentionally, working on what is we now know as separation, but that was not its original intent. We are creators. Look at the other creators on the screen. We are creators, and we're very busy creating. And our brother Jesus has come and said, wow, you know what? You, as you're creating, you're getting a bit lost in some of your own soup. And that individuation, which is a fantastic way to express and experience love, you've got drunk on this process and taken yourself too far into separation. This is costing you. I mean, it's also teaching you, so there's nothing lost here. But Jesus has come around at this point and said, time to collect the sheep back into the flock. You're wonderful. All of us now, wonderful efforts into individuation to express, to extend, to experience love more and more and more, more and more and more. You bet it will not end. It will not end. But this wonderful adventure that we have gone on has taken us a bit too far into separation, where we think we've actually pinched off and we're no longer, the sheep can no longer see the flock. You as an individual can no longer, you don't know God. You don't know source. You don't know that from which you came. You don't know that to which you return. You do not know that to which you are. Instead, you look in the mirror and say, that's what I am. We're healing this. It's time to heal this. You creator, you mischievous juvenile creator. Full of love. new ideas on how to express and extend love all the time. I mean, wow, it's really great what you're up to. But it's time to bring a little more of that love back into your presence. You've been experimenting a lot. So what's needed now for your awakening from your dream of separation, what's needed now is this ability to let go. You're so busy hanging on to logic. It's time to just, even just as a moment, it really, we're only talking about instances of letting go, not vegging out for 6 years or going on samadhi in the desert somewhere. This is not what we're talking about. Your awakening does not mean you disappear into that. It's not what you're doing. However, it does mean you go to peace. It does mean you go to peace. Your awakening. It also means, you know, tonight, very specifically, you have to learn to let go, to personally let go in your mind, to receive the truth, which is everywhere. Okay, good enough. But you're blocking it with all your efforts to make this separation come true. You've built a prison. You've built walls and limits and an identity with a body and time and space. You've built a prison. Really great at sometimes, and it really sucks at others. So this is a little chance for us to let go of the linear. So let's take a couple of minutes, and I'm just going to play this forgotten song audio. It gives me a chance to disappear and you won't even notice. Okay. If that happens, we'll see. All right. Stand by.
The Forgotten Song. Listen. Perhaps you catch a hint of an ancient state, not quite forgotten, dim perhaps, and yet not altogether unfamiliar, like a song whose name is long forgotten, and the circumstances in which you heard completely unremembered. Not the whole song has stayed with you, but just a little wisp of melody, attached not to a person or a place or anything particular, but you remember from just this little part how lovely was the song, how wonderful the setting where you heard it, and how you loved those who were there and listened with you. The notes are nothing, yet you have kept them with you, not for themselves, but as a soft reminder of what would make you weep if you remembered how dear it was to you. You could remember, yet you are afraid, believing you would lose the world you learned since then. Yet you know that nothing in the world you learned is half so dear as this. Listen and see if you remember an ancient song you knew so long ago and held more dear than any melody you taught yourself to cherish since. Beyond the sun and stars, past everything you see, and yet somehow familiar, is an arc of golden light that stretches as you look into a great and shining circle. And all the circle fills with the light before your eyes. Edges of the circle disappear, and what is in it is no longer contained at all. The light expands and covers everything, extending to infinity, forever shining, and with no break or limit anywhere. In perfect continuity. Nor is it possible to imagine that anything could be outside, for there is nowhere that this light is not. Here is the memory of what you are, a part of this, with all of it within, and joined to all, as surely as all is joined to you.
Welcome back, everybody. That recording is on my website for free under free audio meditations. There's about 8 or 10 of those that I've made over the years. And enjoy.
Did we just read together?
What?
Did we read that together in the last week, or did I read it myself?
Yes, we did.
Because that's from the book, right?
It's from the book.
We did. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually from page 445. Oh, yeah, and we're on page 448.
Okay.
So, yeah. And it's 445, section 1. Mm-hmm. So it's that little willingness again. To sort of step out of what you can easily understand and step into what you know. Strange words, I know. But that's what I mean by going nonlinear. Step out of what you can easily understand with your eyes, your ears, your brain. And go still. And step into what you know. That's what this light is. You are light. You are that energy of creation. And this is the only thing that you can actually know about yourself. You can't even know your ego. It changes, its attitudes and its world change. But there is a you who is looking to know. That little spark of energy of creation is the true you. Never goes away. Turn to page 449 in the text. 449. And remember, there's a section called The Responsibility for Sight, where the Course is asking you to start to internalize your experience. And not only at first the lower levels of consciousness, how you experience, but now at higher levels of consciousness, what you experience. It goes up and up. So in order for you to be comfortable with the gifts, actually, that A Course in Miracles is offering, for you to feel comfortable with these gifts and actually say, yes, they are for me. They are for me. You really have to do this letting go that I'm talking about. And you have to have a comfort with part of you that is, Buddhists would probably call it empty. And A Course calls it still. Still. A stillness. The Course also uses the word altar for what I'm trying to talk about tonight. An altar. A place where you would, a kind of holy place where you would take your stuff and it says, bring it to the altar. Because the altar is a holy place. Nothing can defile the altar. And so there is an altar that you have that's never left you. And it is your mind. It is your mind. You can always bring your thoughts to the altar in your mind. And this is like asking the Holy Spirit to weigh in on your stinking thinking or your holy thinking or your lovely thinking or your creative ideas. If you're a musician, you know what I'm talking about. If you're an artist, you know what I'm talking about. There is this very loose thinking that goes on in a creative mind. It's where you take your desires and you bring them to an altar in your mind. And from that point, you can allow a blessing to mix in, a light to mix in with your otherwise desires. And it goes to a higher elevation or higher expression or higher experience. And eventually the poem is written or the music is written and played or the artistic drawing or sculpting like Jason does I do sculpting as well. You just start to feel it come into, and it's a combination of your effort and that of your higher self, creative self. So let's take a look at a few words around this. Tim, when you get a chance, let's go for paragraph 8 on page 449. Welcome, Jason. We're in text page 449.
You've got my mute, I see. Be willing for an instant to leave your altars free of what you placed upon them. And what is really there, you cannot fail to see. The holy instant is not an instant of creation, but of recognition. From recognition comes a vision and suspended judgment. Then only is it possible to look within and see what must be there, plainly in sight and wholly independent of interference and judgment. Undoing is not your task, but it is up to you to welcome it or not. Faith and desire go hand in hand, for everyone believes in what he wants.
Thank you. Beautiful. So, folks, this is a night of practical spiritual practice. What do you actually do with your mind to have access to the truth? How would you go from worrying, for example, to not worrying without lying to yourself, right? So how would you truly access the peace that a spiritual awareness brings? What do you actually do? And this paragraph is printing it out in black and white. Let's go through this a little more closely. So first off, it says, be willing. Do you guys remember we talked about will versus wish? The ego wishes. And the wish means that it may or may not happen. But the spirit wills. And you, in your right mind, only will. You don't wish. Well, how's that? Because you're a creator. You are an extension of all the power there is. And so when you will, it is done. And then you may manifest it for a while and play it out and unfold it, but there's no doubt that it isn't already done as soon as you will it. In the life of the ego, you wish, you try. You try. And then maybe it does, maybe it doesn't happen. That's a wish. So Course in Miracles uses those words quite craftily throughout the book. So now he's encouraging you to really turn over your consciousness to your right thinking. He says, be willing. Be willing then, for an instant, is all it takes. Fear not that you're asked to throw away everything that you like doing. You're not, because you may dream and continue in a body for as long as you like, and again if you like. But if you've come here, you've come to A Course in Miracles, you are in search for a love that it is like a forgotten song that you recognize when you touch it and you're hungry for it. Return to peace, return to joy, return to love, return to awareness. Yes, all of that. It only takes an instant of this true awareness, and that wipes out years of your looking for it and wondering. You know what I mean? If you've had these holy instances, and everybody here probably has, even if you don't recognize it, you've had moments in your life where you just became more awake. You became very present. These are holy instances. These are your awakenings. Be willing for an instant to leave your altars, that's your mind, free of what you placed upon them. And what is really there, you cannot fail to see. The holy instant. It's not an instant of creation. Very powerful but subtle words here. But of recognition. Okay, this is where you're recognizing this, where you're recognizing the truth about what you are. Let's look at a couple of, let's look at just, turn to page, it's one of my favorite paragraphs when we talk about the holy instant. I can't get enough of it. Turn to page 387 in the text. This is where Jesus is trying to put words around this, oh, transportation of your consciousness, of your identity, a transportation of your identity. I mean, it comes with a surrender of the linear, of everything that's obvious to you, but you feel it. You feel this certainty that comes with a holy instant that, for me, it's more certain than anything I ever tried to get out of the world. So, Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you read for us, wonderful, paragraph 11 on text, page 387, Luann?
387.
387. And Jacqueline's going to read for us paragraph 11.
Thank you. Everyone has experienced what he would call a sense of being transported beyond himself. This feeling of liberation far exceeds the dream of freedom sometimes hoped for in special relationships. It is a sense of actual escape from limitations. If you will consider what this transportation really entails, you will realize that it is a sudden unawareness of the body and a joining of yourself and something else in which your mind enlarges to encompass it. It becomes part of you as you unite with it. And both become whole as neither is perceived as separate. What really happens is that you have given up the illusion of a limited awareness and lost your fear of union. The love that instantly replaces it extends to what has freed you and unites with it. And while this lasts, you are not uncertain of your identity and would not limit it. You have escaped from fear to peace, asking no questions of reality, but merely accepting it. You have accepted this instead of the body and have let yourself be one with something beyond it, simply by not letting your mind be limited by it.
He's kind of dancing around it with very beautiful words. But essentially, that last sentence, by not letting your mind be limited by the body, even though the body's right there, even though you've got all this proof constantly of the body, there is an elevation of your experience that occurs when you meditate, when you have a holy instant, and you leave the body behind, even for an instant. And that's what keeps you going and probably keeps you coming back to A Course in Miracles, because the lessons will induce this free state. And maybe it comes with tears sometimes. Sundari?
I just feel like highlighting it. It's like in the book I wrote, this is the only paragraph from this whole book I quote. And it seems to me so important to notice those things, to notice those moments. And there's so many for me. And the first one was while I was singing Bach's B minor mass. And the audience went away, and the choir went away, and the conductor went away, and everything went away. And it was like a really distinct, it's like loving something so much that you fall into the pure love of the joining. And then through that become everything all at once. And I've experienced it with people. One of my mentors, like just blanking out, you know, just like a touch, or just blanking out, no bodies, no sense, no memory, no being able to record, but then and coming back feeling like having been in complete union with everything, although without contact. I mean, there's
sure. But you know, they also happen more often than that. And those are sounds really wonderful experiences, Sundari. The holy instances often occur any time when you're reading A Course in Miracles and you go, oh yeah, it can be just as simple as that. Doesn't have to be an out of, you know, forgetting the time and stuff that disappear. It's these little moments, and I like what Sundari, when you started speaking, these moments need to be celebrated. They need to be recognized. And you'll notice how with your Course in Miracles study, they're happening more and more, and there's a lot of them, and they start to highlight those times when you're working with yourself and you're remembering to love yourself. Or you're reading the, like I say, my any workbook lessons and so forth, so loaded with so many triggers for me that go, oh yeah, I could choose peace. In fact, I'm going to do it right now. And you breathe easier. The next breath is easier. So this sort of thing, everybody turn to page 360. Turn to page 360.
Oh, we're turning. I want to say I'm so glad you said that, Andrew, because I've only had one experience like what Sundari is talking about. But so many times something happens and I say, that feels like such a blessing.
That's what I want you to see, Luann. Good.
Three what? 360?
360. Yeah.
You know
the whole experience of love and joy and happiness, it has a gravity of its own. When you are willing to open your mind to, let's just take patience, for example. Patience is a type of rest. If you're really, really, really willing to be patient in a situation as it unfolds, you instantly feel restful. Because the gravity of patience has you in its hold. This is true for true sharing or joy. When you start to have these thoughts, honestly, they start to have you. Do you know what I mean?
Patience is one of my downfalls, but when I remember, oh, I need to have some patience about this, I can take a breath of relief. Yeah.
Yeah. Or how about kindness? If you are involved in something and you realize somebody else is having a harder time than you are, you might decide to turn on some extra kindness in whatever form it takes in that situation. Do you notice that? Your voice goes softer. You might give the person some distance. Here is that this, you know, it's a bit of a surrender. So look at, let's have Deborah. I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 11 on page 360?
The holy instant is a miniature of heaven, sent to you from heaven. It is a picture too set in a frame. Yet if you accept this gift, you will not see the frame at all, because the gift can only be accepted through your willingness to focus all your attention on the picture. The holy instant is a miniature of eternity. It is a picture of timelessness set in a frame of time. If you focus on the picture, you will realize that it was only the frame that made you think it was a picture. Without the frame, the picture is seen as what it represents. For as the whole thought system of the ego lies in its gifts, so the whole of heaven lies in this instant, borrowed from eternity and set in time for you.
For as the whole thought system of the ego lies in the ego's gifts. Take a moment. Let that soak in. Notice the circle. I'll read it again. For as the whole thought system, that includes guilt, fear, anger, attack, worthlessness, jealousy, so forth. For as the whole thought system of the ego lies in the ego's gifts, comma, So the whole of heaven lies in this instant, this holy instant, borrowed from eternity and set in time for you. What a magnificent sentence. What a magnificent invitation that shows you that this is a gift that you end up giving yourself with your willingness, as is the ego has been. Barbara.
I accept the gift. I really do. Before, when you were talking about be willing, started that section, be willing. I was thinking, because I had a really hard day. I talked about how, generally speaking, you know, practicing and reading this book on a daily basis has made a huge difference, and nothing has changed about that. It has made a huge difference. But there are those hard days when I don't know who's operational. I'm really trying hard. I am willing, but I'm almost begging. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, help me deal with this situation that's so hard. And Sundari, I was thinking about your recent experience with court and all of that. It's that kind of thing. I had to deal very specifically with the nitty gritty of some documents, appraisals that have been going on for two properties. And you just know it's going to be a nightmare going in there. You just see your lawyer's name in the email box and you know it's going to be a nightmare. And, you know, I am willing to operate from a lot of what I've learned from this book, but it's really hard in the nitty gritty of the real world where you have to act in one way or another. And you really do, it engages your ego. It's an ego world. You have to do something. You can't just throw up your hands and say peace and love. You know, you have to act. And so I just had a really hard time with that today. And, you know, the way I dealt with it was just acknowledging that I was having a really hard time and that all of the terrible thoughts I was having, I did not want to hold on to, because I remember reading that in the book somewhere, that yes, you'll mess up, but just don't be willing to not hold on to that or value that. And I don't. So when you talk about this as a practical spirituality, how do we get through these things? I guess I'm kind of answering it myself by saying, you know, you have to do it. You have to go through it. It felt okay that I was saying, I don't want to hold on to this way of thinking. I'm willing to give up this way of thinking. But all I can say is it's really hard. And it's really hard.
Sundari, I'll turn it over to you in just a second, because you have a lot to share on this. But I want to say this real quick, that it's hard when you're trying to live two different lives at the same time. Course in Miracles helps you make the only separation that you should make, and that's separate yourself from your ego. And your ego has got a court date.
Right.
You do not have a court date. Your ego does. And that game should be played with its rules. And pay the lawyer.
Right.
I mean, but you could keep your peace through this, as long as you're not identifying with the thing that's in court 100%. You're playing that. You're running that character.
Yeah.
And that
I hate running that character.
Yeah.
I hate running that character.
There are many things that you will do to improve that. If you want more peace in your life, there's ways to do that. But maybe the procedure you're going through is part of choosing to have more peace in your life. Maybe that's part of it. But nonetheless, your peace will come when you can dissociate yourself from the woman in court. Yeah.
My feeling is basically stay the course. You know what I mean? Stay the course that I've been doing, which is studying the course. And these times will come, and I'll deal with them the best I can.
Yeah.
And I do have to do what I have to do, and I don't like it, but
as dark as they were before.
Right. Good point. Thank you.
It's good. Sundari, what do you got?
A little different thread. I was struck by the sentence when you were talking about your inbox. You just know when you see this in the inbox that it's so interesting, like what we're blessing ourselves with each moment. And this week I caught myself in one of those where these guys had worked 7 months on my house and then disappeared, but they forgot to put in the gutter and the downspout. And so the rain was just going, you know, when it was happening, and a lot of other little things. And so I had left over the last 4 months or so, maybe 20 emails, texts, calls, never receiving back any word. And this week I did yet another, but I caught myself realizing I was thinking, oh, it took 2 years to set up these guys. They never answer me back. And I caught it. You know, I caught how I was throwing that out for myself as a blessing. And
yeah, as a blessing.
Well, I must have caught it enough, because all of a sudden, within an hour of the text or e-call, I don't remember what I did right at that point, but I put out to this guy. He called me back and he said, oh, would you like me to be there in an hour? And then for the next 2 days, he rounded up 2 days of work fixing every detail of the project, every little detail and more. Oh, should we also paint this? Oh, should we also paint that?
So this was all ready to happen for you. Look at page 312 in light of the story Sundari just told us. Look at page 312, paragraph 1. And Barbara?
Yeah.
When you get there, would you read for us paragraph 1?
Okay, on 312.
Yes.
The holy instant and special relationships.
That's it.
The holy instant is the holistic learning device for teaching you love's meaning. For its purpose is to suspend judgment entirely.
Now, in Sundari's story, if you could just drop judgment, you can just let this happen. But the judgment can block and make him never want to come back ever to put that gutter up. Anyway, please continue, Barbara.
Okay. For its purpose is to suspend judgment entirely. Judgment always rests on the past, for past experience is the basis on which you judge. Judgment becomes impossible without the past, for without it, you do not understand anything. You would make no attempt to judge because it would be quite apparent to you that you do not understand what anything means. You are afraid of this because you believe that without the ego, all would be chaos. Yet I assure you that without the ego, all would be love.
That beautiful.
I hear you, Sundari. I hear you.
You're still going to do what you do, but you need to drop all the ego's involvement, the ego's judgment, the ego's loss, the ego's fear. But that doesn't mean you can't still dial a phone or send a text message. or do whatever you have to do in court. But you can do it without fear. And this would be the big
change. That's helpful. Thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. Now, okay, look back on our page 449. Actually, now we're on 450 because the sentence we're looking at is sentence 2. And it's got these pretty amazing words to be in one sentence. It says, the holy instant is not an instant of creation, but of recognition. As if it was always there and was just waiting for you to return. For recognition comes of vision and suspended judgment. Suspended judgment. Then only is it possible to look within and see what must be there, plainly in sight and wholly independent of inference and judgment. Okay, now, next piece of our puzzle tonight. Undoing is not your task. Why? Because the you that's reading this book is a doer, completely committed. The ego self. You're going to suspend for a moment, open your mind for a moment, and the truth will do this for you. The undoing happens when you don't do, not when you do something. When you don't do, a moment of stillness, holy instant. And it is done automatically because it's a recognition of what is already there. Okay? So, undoing is not your task, but it is up to you to welcome it or not. And, you know, frankly, we all love our egos and our egos' plans a bit too much to make this stuff automatic. Until it is automatic. Eventually it becomes automatic for you. With continuing work where you choose peace, continuing empowerment of your listening to your Holy Spirit instead of your ego, then you get automatically, you choose peace instead of raising your voice, for example, or going straight to fear. You might say, you know, these things usually work out. I'm not sure how yet. Rather than going straight to fear and saying, oh, this is only bad. Undoing is not your task, but it is up to you to welcome the undoing or not. Faith and desire go hand in hand, for everyone believes in what he wants. That's a sweet circle for you. So, this undoing thing, what does it take to not do? The ego saying do, 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 worry, 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 call, 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 go, go, go. What does it take to get a moment of peace? And I say, when you do this workbook enough times, you realize that there isn't any time when you can't call yourself to peace. If you really do the workbook, it says every 15 minutes, say this sentence. And you get your timer or set it or your phone, and you find yourself right in the middle of a very difficult moment, and then your timer goes off. And if you're really doing the workbook in that moment, you will catch yourself, you will catch your ego, you will go to peace because it's slightly more important to you than whatever beep you're dealing with at that hour. And you will wake up to the power of your mind because you physically, practically did it. You stopped your rotten thinking, you went back to your course lesson for the day, and it brought you peace. And you said, wow, that's how I want to live. Then you can. You know you can.
About 10 years ago, a woman ran into my car, and it was clearly her problem. She got a ticket, and I did not, all that other stuff. And then her insurance company kept calling me, wanting me to accept a very minor amount for what happened. And they called and wrote every week for a year and a half. And I found out that if I didn't do something within another half a year, I would be too late to do it. You can't sue somebody for what happens after, if it's over 2 or 2.5 years, I don't know which, can't remember which. But anyway, so I put up with it for such a long time, and then I thought, okay, what are you going to do about it instead of put up with it?
Mm.
And it was torture putting up with it. And I, when I got to the point where I said, you know what, why don't you just take care of it and see what happens? So I put in a small claims court. I went to Watsonville, and I took a lesson from this woman about how you should be in court. And then I said, okay, now whatever happens, happens. And whether it comes, I just said, okay, I've done everything I can. And it went in my favor. But I've often wondered what you're saying kind of means if I give up and do what I need to do or what I can do, and if it doesn't turn out okay, well, I was wondering what would happen if that had happened, but it turned out good. And now what I'm hearing you say is my mind said, this is the right path for me to do, and I created the right result because of it.
Well, I want to take you back to what you just said, because the result was not whether or not the outcome is judged in your favor and you get the thousands of dollars.
Well, that's what I was wondering. What would have happened if it didn't turn out my way?
Exactly. What would have happened is you would have said the same sentence you just did now, which was, I decided to stop worrying about it and do something about it.
Okay.
That instantly started to bring you peace.
Yes.
Because you were being responsible and loving yourself and you know, going to court and doing what normal people do to handle that situation.
Right.
Some people don't have a sense of fairness that you do, and they just would roll over and they'd be more peaceful walking away.
Well, I was just thinking what I would have had to figure out a way, and this is way before I started with the Course of Miracles, but I would have had to figure out a way to be peaceful with it, even
peaceful.
If I lost.
Maybe. That's exactly the point. Very good, Luann.
So I was thinking when it was all happened, well, how am I going to feel about this when it's over and I lose? And I said, well, if I lose, I lose. And that's all there is to it. So I probably would have been peaceful afterwards, but I can't
hear. Here's the key takeaway from your story that I'd like to highlight.
Thank you.
It's that you chose at that moment, the most peaceful thing was to go ahead and file at small claims.
Mm-hmm.
You felt yourself hug yourself in that moment. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That was way more peaceful than watching the time run out and then for the rest of your life wondering what would have happened if you would have. You know, mm-hmm. You were owed and you didn't collect and on and on. So and that's it's nice. It's a perfect story, Luann, for me tonight because I have a hard time making a distinction and helping your story is the only way we can possibly do this for the people. You don't physically stop living your life when you choose peace. What you do is you choose peace while you live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, the peace came when you decided to love yourself and do what you thought was right.
Absolutely. From then on, I was peaceful.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
Same with what you're going through, Barbara. You'll simply look at your options, ask the Holy Spirit to help you, which one would bring you...
I'm listening.
What would bring you more peace?
This is really, really helpful.
Because this is the test of truth.
Yes. Yes, I'm getting the distinction. Yeah. About doing what you need to do, trying to do that in a peaceful way, and accepting whatever the outcome is in a peaceful way.
But yeah. I would not use the word trying. I would say if I'm going to be doing what I need to do and to be peaceful, then it wouldn't be trying. I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to be peaceful before I even do it.
Well, that's when we get good at it. Then that's what we call will. You will yourself to be peaceful, and then you are peaceful.
Right, but I didn't feel like will. I just feel like the most peaceful thing I could do.
Well, I want to make it. I want to make another distinction between will and wish. Wish is trying. Will is not trying.
Okay.
What do you got, Don?
By the way, I'm having connection problems. So.
Oh, me too. Sorry.
If you don't.
Me too. Me too. Sound is awful.
Hearing me, just wave your hand. So something that Sundari shared that seemed to be critical to a breakthrough was that she caught herself being judgmental, you know, and saying, oh, it's going to be the same old thing and it never has worked. And then I'm hearing Barbara share, she wants to be peaceful, but is there in there also something important about giving up judgment about the whole circumstance, even what's right and wrong, you know, what the right outcome, or you see what I'm saying? I don't have a conclusion. I have an inquiry here.
Yeah, judgment is the block to allowing that person and yourself to have a loving experience, or even a comfortable experience, or even a peaceful experience. So you do something very difficult. She has to go and tell him he's going to do some work for free. That's never good news for the contractor. However, if she adds judgment in there and beats him over the head with judgment, he's just going to want to defend himself. And it's just harder. But to accept the moment, accept the day as it is, accept what's happening today. And she can just receive that person's kindness and work in the hour. He says, I'll be there an hour. She says, good. She doesn't say, you should have been here an hour a month ago. Now you've got contention. She has every right to say that according to the ego. Drop the judgment. Yes, Don.
With regard to Barbara. So I think, Barbara, you're talking about, well, so the point I'm trying to get at also is if Barbara goes into it without the conclusion that there's a right outcome and a wrong outcome, but rather goes into it trusting that the result will be, I'll call it wholesome. There may be a more Course in Miracles term. Then everybody will have, and there won't be a situation where one person's getting and the other one's giving up. It'll be not a getting situation, but a healthy resolution situation.
Yeah, you know, it's even more basic than that. That's beautiful, Don. And that is certainly a healthy way to approach it, for sure. But you know what? We're not outcome-based. You don't need, if you're even thinking about the outcome, you're getting treacherously close back into the spiritual ego and the ego. Hmm. Rather, think about how you're going to feel as you go through whatever happens to get to the outcome. This is actually your life. When the outcome happens, it's over. When the outcome shows up, it's past tense. It's way more important to be walking the path in peace. That should be your focus.
The process, not the outcome.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Yes. 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 Good. 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 Yeah. That's a metaphysical Course in Miracles right there from chapter 16. Is don't be working on the outcome. It's called setting the goal. You set the goal before the outcome. You set the goal before the interaction so that you can live peacefully and work your way in the way that you'd like to actually live, which is in peace. And that also makes you more capable when you're going through these difficult things. When you have a peaceful frame of mind, you're more open-minded. And it makes you a little smarter. And it makes you a little able to receive help as well, like Sundari got, when it shows up, when you are peaceful. So only good things come with being at peace, for sure. Good, good, good. Okay. Can we jump ahead? Let's just look at one more place where the Course is talking about undoing. Go to workbook page 1. It's the introduction to the workbook, actually. But it's still, I think it still has the number 1 on it. It does. Workbook page 1. Here we are. Jesus has just finished taking you through 31 chapters of the text, a whole bunch of theoretical stuff, just building confidence in, you know, him as an authority and you as a willing student. And then we go for this introduction in A Course in Miracles. You know, we should just read this. Let's go for that. Don, when you get there, would you start reading for us the introduction?
Okay. A theoretical foundation such as the text provides is necessary as a framework to make the exercises in this workbook meaningful. Yet, it is doing the exercises that will make the goal of the course possible. An untrained mind can accomplish nothing. It is the purpose of this workbook to train your mind to think along the lines the text sets forth.
Okay, so first note to take there is this is mind training. Not mind deleting, not getting you a new mind, but training the one you have. Okay, and then Luann, I got your mute. Please give us paragraph 2.
The exercises are very simple. They do not require a great deal of time, and it does not matter where you do them. They need no preparation. The training period is 1 year or 3, like it took me. The exercises are numbered 1 to 365. Do not undertake to do more than one set of exercises a day.
Okay, and please go ahead and read the next paragraph too, Luann.
You kind the workbook of, is divided into 2 main sections. The first dealing with the undoing of the way you see now, and the second with the acquisition of true perception.
Wow. So if you ever wondered what's going on in the workbook, why is there a part 1 and a part 2? There it is. The first part of the workbook, nothing I see means anything. My mind's preoccupied with past thoughts. You know, I see nothing as it is now. All images are thoughts I've made. The first half of the workbook is the undoing of the way you see now. And then, this is the same, by the way, it's the same discussion I have with the atonement. The atonement in the first half of A Course in Miracles is indeed an undoing of everything you held as limited an ego. And then the term atonement changes in the second half of Course in Miracles, roughly, to a gain of power for you, a gain of function, returning you to the holy mind from which you are extended. So getting you out of prison and then showing you how you're free. Please continue.
With the exception of the review periods, each day's exercises are planned around one central idea, which is stated first. This is followed by a description of a specific procedures by which the idea for the day is to be applied.
And now some more mind training. Ross, I got your mute. Give us paragraph 4, please.
The purpose of the workbook is to train your mind in a systematic way to a different perception of everyone and everything in the world. The exercises are planned to help you generalize the lessons so that you will understand that each of them is equally applicable to everyone and everything you see.
Sounds pretty thorough. Jason, I got your mute.
Transfer of training in true perception does not proceed as does transfer of the training of the world. If true perception has been achieved in connection with any person, situation, or event, total transfer to everyone and everything is certain. On the other hand, one exception held apart from true perception makes its accomplishments anywhere impossible.
I'm sorry, Jason, did you read that correctly? That seems really harsh. Would you please reread that last sentence? And let's just make sure that he read it right.
On the other hand,
fine print.
One exception held apart from true perception makes it accomplishment anywhere impossible.
Period. Black and white. Make no mistake. There are no half measures for your choosing peace, for your choosing your right mind. It's not that difficult when you distinguish between what fear feels like and what patience feels like. You see? Judgment has an attack in it, the judgment that we're talking about. You know what attack feels like, and then you know what embrace feels like. So that's not that complicated, but it's very specific what he's saying. Obviously, love and hate, they do not communicate. So, which is why it's so important to actually work this material and demand that it work. When you do those workbook lessons, you should be demanding that they work, you know? And remember, he says, if you think this course doesn't work, maybe you haven't done what it's asked. Remember, he kind of jabs you back one spot. But this stuff works. These gifts of peace of mind, they are awaiting your willingness to actually open an altar in your mind where you choose peace. You still do what you do, but you do it peacefully. Jason.
Well, I noticed last week when I was reading the text before doing the lesson that I couldn't comprehend what I was reading, though I know English fairly well. And it was very frustrating because I would read it 3 times. And at one point I said, I must stop now. I can't, force a round peg in a square hole. And then I went to the lesson for the day. But it gets kind of frustrating when that happens because I know that I'm not stupid, but it sometimes doesn't,
Jason and everybody, this will happen to everybody. Jason, I want to remind you and everybody that when that happens, you have come across something that is written for you tomorrow. This is written for another day in your spiritual journey. There are many levels being taught in this book. Many levels being taught in this book. And you hit one that was out of your reach. That happens. Just read it and say, okay, next paragraph. And the next paragraph will probably explain to you exactly what you were trying to figure out in most cases. Good night, Tim. Good to see you. And so the first and the only note is keep reading, because the next paragraph often explains it. And even if it doesn't, it'll give you something you can work with. And you'll see, you'll come back around another time when you've let go of a little more ego. And then that paragraph, you will be able to hear it. Yeah,
I understand. Yeah. I understand the paragraphs differently every single time I read them.
That's a good sign, Luann. That means you are growing and learning and open-minded. Yeah. Very, very good. Yeah. Sundari.
Love that, Jason. My intro to this material was through Gary Renard's book, Disappearance of the Universe, and I could only read 3 paragraphs about it at a time, and it was like overwhelming. It took me over a year to read that book because I didn't have any of the ideas, and so it was like I had to roll them around, and like sometimes even a paragraph was too much. But then I spent the year reading it. And then when I got to this stuff, it was like, it was such a great preparation. But I felt the same thing.
So, No, just for kicks, because we're here, let's finish reading these instructions. It's really good to see this every once in a while. I think we're around to Sundari. Sundari, I got your mute. Would you please read for us paragraph 6?
The only general rules to be observed throughout then are, first, that the exercises be practiced with great specificity, as will be indicated. This will help you to generalize the ideas involved to every situation in which you find yourself and to everyone and everything in it. Second, be sure that you do not decide for yourself that there are some people, situations, or things to which the ideas are inapplicable.
Busted!
This will interfere with transfer of training. The very nature of true perception is that it has no limits. It is the opposite of the way you see now.
Oh, this is so encouraging to read that paragraph. You know, knowing what it's about to ask of you when you go through the workbook, that he really means what he says. This workbook is intentional. The instructions are intentional. The wording and the challenges you go through are intentional. I love it.
Can I ask
if
there are any timers left?
Do you have timers? I no longer have lessons cards. They have gone. They have been discontinued, but I do have timers.
Okay, and the timers are different than the phone. I mean, I've been setting my phone, but I hate it.
Right, the timer is different.
Do you have like a vibrate on the timer?
The timer has three modes. You can use one or all of them. It's got a light, it's got vibrate, and it's got a bell.
Okay.
And I've modified it so that you can put it in your purse or your pocket and the buttons won't get pressed. It won't turn itself off, which I found in the early days. And you can push through your pants pocket to reset it. And when you reset it, it starts the 15-minute counter again with a single button without even taking it out.
Okay, great. I'm going to get one of those.
Yeah, it's great. There's more to it than that, too, but they're really good.
Are they online? Is that what they are?
Yeah, on my website. Okay. You know. Yeah.
I ask you, have you modified it since I bought one about 3 years ago?
No, I modified yours, too. All the ones I ship are modified so the ego can't press the button accidentally. You get yours yet, Jacqueline?
It hasn't arrived yet, but probably, tomorrow or the next day.
All right, very good. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
You know, what I think is wonderful about that last part is it applies to everything. So when I feel bad, I know I'm not applying it.
That a girl. I love how it's so simple that it applies to everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that starts to, even though it could be hard because there's people in your life that you really hate or that you really want to protect and they're not being treated right and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you take this stuff literally, great specificity, complete surrender over whatever topic you're applying the lesson. This helps you with a generalization. And then recognize that this will apply to everything you see. And that includes everything you can remember. That includes everybody who's died. You know, all these thoughts are thoughts in your mind. And A Course in Miracles will help you clean your mind of all these ego thoughts.
Yeah, I was remembering something that my mother and father did years and years and years ago. And I remembered again. I said, okay, I need to stop feeling bad about that.
You need a miracle. It keeps coming back because you believe that it holds something that somebody should be guilty about, most likely.
Yeah, so what I realized when I went back over it was, time-wise, there was no way it could have happened the way I've always thought it did.
Busted ego trying to make somebody feel sorry for something. Isn't that great? You took a moment and you realized it couldn't happen the way the ego would have you remember, and now you can release it for being balderdash.
You know, I get confused about something. I kind of embarrassed to bring it up and because I don't understand it. recently I've had a lot of thoughts of suicide, and throughout the day I'll be doing something and I'll just get this real deep bump in my stomach and want to be dead. It's so strange. Because it's so much pain. The pain is so much. And I'm going, what am I in pain for? I have a great life. I mean, you know, I'm very lucky. But it just hits through. I don't know if it's mental illness or if it's because I'm working so hard on the program. This, you know, the workbook every day. Because I'm so committed to my meditation and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you have any answers to that, Andrew?
Well, yeah, the first thing is...
this is not the place for that.
Yeah, yeah, it may not be if it goes, but let me give you a couple of thoughts to go with. The first is three things. Everybody needs to recognize, and I know you do, Jason, we talked about this before. You need to recognize this whole suicide thing. If you kill the body, you don't kill your ego. And so if you have routed your discomfort and you recognize that it's your ego that is making you feel unhappy, killing your body is not going to make it easier. In fact, most likely, your current body is probably bringing you to a culmination of surrendering your ego in just the right way. And that these discomforts that you're having and difficulties you're having in your life are quite possibly the exact medicine that you need from a loving group of angels that have said, this is how we can have you preserve your independence and still awaken. So first thing is, suicide does not kill your ego. Your ego is in your mind. Your mind is not in your body. So you will just come right around with yet another burden of another one added. If you do commit suicide, anybody, do it on a good day. Do it when you're feeling really joyous and you just like to go off into heaven and try out the harp there. That would be an easy death. Okay, so that's the first point. And the second point is that your body circumstances, all of our body circumstances, they can give us temporary gut pains and depressions. And technically, it's a drop in dopamine, if everybody's studied that enough. You get these drops in dopamine that happen in the body naturally, and your ego will grab a hold of that, and it will focus on that darkness and say, oh my God, it's real this time. It's simply a lack of dopamine that will disappear if you exercise, if you stand up and sing your favorite song, if you go up down the stairs once, you'll go, oh, that's over. Like it's over now. Okay. This is one of the things to watch out for, the tricky thing of the body and this path, especially in the morning. All of us now are past the age. Now you must recognize that in your early morning hours, your body stops producing dopamine. It always has, but you're asleep. And then you wake up in the early morning. And as we're older now, when you get past 45 years old, you wake up and you don't feel as good as you used to feel. That's why? Because when you were younger, your dopamine response in your brain could create that good feeling the minute it saw light. And there was a cascade of events. It's all chemicals, folks. And you can't even put them on the head of a pin, on the head of this. You couldn't even put how much chemicals I'm talking about here. But they make all the difference in how you feel, on how you feel, on how you feel. So recognize for the rest of your lives, everybody just needs to practically know this about living in a body, that in your morning hours, when you wake up, your dopamine production is low and you're going to feel like crap. And then you do your practice or whatever you do to make yourself awake in the morning, and you'll come alive again. That's just something. Don't let your ego take control of that cycle. Don't let your ego take control of that cycle. Don, I got your mute.
Okay. So I hear sometimes it said my ego and sometimes the ego.
Yeah.
Like it is, I think I've even read there is no my ego. There's the ego. Can you help talk about that?
Yeah, that's good, Don. That's a really good, that's a good passage. It's the same with the Holy Spirit. There's really only one Holy Spirit. It's a spirit of wholeness. There's really only one ego. It's a spirit of separation. Do you follow me? You can manifest this in many, many ways, because there's, but there's really only one idea of separation, and there's only one mind that is an extension of God. In truth, at the highest levels, it's all one. This is not where we live. So now you can take responsibility for your focus on the ego or your focus on spirit. Now it becomes your ego and your Holy Spirit. But you recognize that there's really only one spirit of wholeness and there's only one spirit of separation. Yes, sir.
So it's the spirit that is the ego spirit or the spirit of ego, but each of us maybe has little different stories that are in the ego.
You bet we're focused. If when you're focused on it, it becomes yours.
There are different stories of it.
Oh, yeah, different stories, but they only appear different until you back up one layer and see that they're all one story of separation.
Oh, okay, got it. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you.
And then it just becomes simpler and simpler. Good, good, good. Okay, well, we could go on. Helpful, Jason? All right, good. Sundari.
I just want to say that the more I looked at it, it seems to me, and I think the book says this, that the ego has but one goal, and that's your death. And
yeah.
So it's useful to me when I get at those really, really deep pits, you know, where that urge for death to comes up, to say, oh, the ego's got me. I mean, just to put those words
to
on.
Put it, locate it where it deserves to be.
Yeah, and somehow that helps me a lot to realign just by defining where I am and what's happening in that way.
Beautifully said, Sundari. The Course supports that 100%. It talks about two places, and one of them is the only proper use of separation is to separate yourself from your ego. And just the idea that those are ego thoughts is helpful. Like any addiction, you know, they say that the first thing you do is get out of denial and look at the addiction. Look at the idea of death. Where could the death be coming from except for the thing that designs all limit and all ends? That's the ego. And boy, you bet. That's a great way to snap out of it.
Well, and then I sort of spent a year looking at every little irritation, the wrong ice cream flavor, and it truly does go to murder. It you know, I mean, I just within the fabric of my being, if I was really honest and look what's under this and what's under this, it goes to death. That's the only thing it goes to.
Very good.
It's useful for me to understand that the death urge is the very core of ego.
I think that's perfectly said. Thank you, Sundari. It's exactly right. Exactly right. In fact, well, you remember, we're running out of time now, but I'm just going to tell you. There's a section in chapter 16 where it says that the ego knows only one thing, comma. It knows what it does not want to come of a situation. Period. That's what it knows. It doesn't really know what's best, but it knows for sure what it doesn't like, what it doesn't want. That's why death is the solution for the ego in order to keep itself in business, because of its power to end and to control you. It's really insidious, but it's very effective for what you designed it. We're just waking up from taking that too far. Yeah, good. Thank you, Sundari. Very helpful.
Yeah, you know, it's mentioned also in the Gary Renard book, Your Moral Reality, when he discusses about suicide being the number one quiet topic in the world today.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it, and it's happening all the time, everywhere.
You bet.
So it's part of the ego's cloth of denial, I guess, or something.
Yeah. Just don't fall into the idea that you can become free with suicide. That is the ego's plan mistake, just to wrap you deeper into its grip.
very clear there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go. Very good. There's nowhere to go. And so better to get still, come into the present moment, even when you're feeling really crappy. Come into the present moment, get between your breaths, get between your thoughts, and the light will come.
It's all temporary.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazingly powerful that way.
Thank you.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I know. I have 20 or so places in the course where it kind of mentions suicide. And we don't have time to go through now, but I suppose we only have a couple of minutes. We could look at a couple of them just for fun. I mean, what kind of fun is talking about suicide? But it's a lot of fun when you can avoid it and you can have happiness instead. So let's do that.
It's something between your what and your something between your breath or whatever you.
Oh, say. Yeah. Look, this is the quick solution to the worst discomforts that you can have, and suicide would certainly be one of those. But anytime you really, really get dark, when you really get messed up, go still and you get between your breaths and between your thoughts. Okay. Go seek to just abide for just an instant between your thoughts. It's easy between your breaths, okay? But that's where you start. And then you keep going. So I'm just going to go before I kill myself. I'm going to go still. And when you get really quiet and really still. Yes, Ross.
So just for myself, I mean, kind of my attitude, and I think the course would support this, is, hey, I'm in the classroom now. I have the teaching materials to get out of this mess. Why would I want to waste time and risk getting into, say, some new body or some new situation where I'd have to find this course all crying out loud? I have the way out right in my hands. It's telling me exactly what to do so I don't have to deal with bodies anymore ever.
I love it.
Why would I waste any time trying to die and then potentially start all over again to find the course? Maybe I'm born in a shack in Africa next time and there's no books around, you know?
Oh, man, brother.
It's like the easiest time I could ever have to escape having to deal with the body. I mean, that's just my attitude.
Oh, my God, you already have a copy.
Make the most of it right now while you're sitting here in a Zoom meeting with the best opportunity with, you know, 9 teachers to help you get out of having to deal with the body. Why would you want to screw that up? I mean, that's just my attitude.
That's great, Ross.
It's just my thinking.
Yeah, I've often thought of my next lifetime, what's going to be there to teach me in this lifetime that any better than this book, this lifetime.
Maybe you won't have to have another lifetime if you pay attention and, you know, get your lessons down.
The time is now.
That's what... In Gary Renard's book, that's one of the things that they kind of tease him with is, hey, you're supposed to come back as Persa in the next lifetime, but not necessarily. If you look at the miracle principles, it says that you can shorten time. You can take intervals of time and cut them out of the process. So, yes, it's been scripted, but not necessarily written in concrete. You can shorten. You don't have to go through every lifetime that you scripted. Because, after all, you scripted it. Why can't you just change the script?
My thought about the whole thing is it reassures me that it's already happened. So I know I'm going to get there eventually.
Yeah, beautiful. You shorten it. That's my thinking.
And yeah. Well, you know, we are at the leading edge of waking up.
Right.
This is what it looks like, and this book looks just like what I need, and I can do it. I love it.
Shoot, I spent 40 years looking for it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna start over again and spend another.
I spent 77 years looking for it, and I had it right in my library the whole time.
That's more motivation still.
Better get it done, man.
Sindari,
got your hands on it.
The day before this guy called with the thing, all of a sudden a woman friend called and ended up in my place from Montana an hour after she called too. And she told me at one point, one of a childhood incident came up, like the core of my ego. And she said, just change it right now. Whoosh, whoosh.
And then, I like that.
Imagine a scene. Imagine how it should have been. Imagine how it should have been. And she, it was like magic. And she went, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And it's like, it's something I've known, but it's nothing I've ever applied. It's something I know how to change the past. And yet I still held that picture because I never thought to put the way it should have been. And she went whoosh, whoosh, whoosh in two different instances. And all of a sudden, I could put in the picture instead of being alone and the baby's coming and I'm at tension and I lose, you know, all of a sudden, the whole family's sitting together on the couch. And you can keep that picture. It's like there never was a past. And I'm only creating it now. And there never was a future life or a past life. And I've known all mm-hmm. that. But I needed her to come in from Montana and go, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, for the first time ever, she made me visualize the way it should have ended. It should have been somehow. And it's like mind-boggling.
It's like lucid dreaming. It's all a dream anyway, so you can decide what you want to live at any one moment. Done.
Andrew, I just did a search for suicide. I don't find anywhere for the suicide in A Course in Miracles.
Yeah, there's actually, I have, I mean, the word itself, it kind of talks about ending your life or leaving the planet, things like that, the word itself. But I have more than 10. I have 25.
Okay.
So maybe one night we'll spend more time talking about suicide because it is interesting that it handles it. No, it's too depressing. Yeah. There's enough hard stuff in this book already. All right, everybody. Well, I'm going to break us into breakout rooms. You just say goodbye to somebody individually. Say goodbye to me now and everybody. And thanks for studying Course with me. We'll do it again next week.
Bye, everybody.
Imagine that. More fun.
Oh, my
God. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So you can join a room if you wish. I'm going to pop Deborah into room one.
How does it work when you do
Don
that?
Don into room two. I'm going to put Jacqueline in room three.
Why would you do that?